Tell us what we're sitting next to. What is this that we're looking at here, the covered wagon?
That is called a sheep wagon. And inside you'll find a cook stove and a bed and a bench. And that's pretty much it. We have 4 square feet of floor space beyond our outside of our stove and our bench and so
no cha-cha-cha.
Yeah, stand close together whenever we're dancing with each other.
What is it like for a woman to be inside something this small and to travel the distances that you guys have been traveling?
Oh my goodness, maddening. It's an exercise in minimalistic living, and it's like living in a giant puzzle. Everything has to be in its place, a place for everything, and everything has to be in its place.
Now, you guys said something interesting before we started recording. You were saying this is your anniversary trip.
It is. We've been married a year this month, and it's a memorial ride for my son, who passed away last year, and we're doing the Cherokee Trail of Tears all the way to Oklahoma from Red Clay, Tennessee. And it is also a bringing two lives together in a small space. It is a honeymoon trip as well as a memorial trip. We're following the Trail of Tears. Several years ago, I was given a vision that I would be walking in the footsteps of my grandmothers. And my grandmothers were the Cherokee women, the elders, the women. Jean's has had Cherokee in his ancestry, too. And so when Andrew Jackson declared that the Cherokee had to leave their homeland, John Ross and the leadership was in Washington, D.C., arguing before the Senate and before the United States Supreme Court. And they won that argument, and the United States Supreme Court declared the Cherokee Nation a sovereign nation, and that Andrew Jackson needed to deal with them as a sovereign nation, as nation to nation. Andrew Jackson's comment was, they made the law, let them enforce it, because the president has the control of the armed forces. Andrew Jackson ignored that. He had all the Cherokee round up, put in stockades. They weren't allowed to bring anything with them. All they had was the clothes on their backs. They were put in these stockades, and hundreds of them were dying in the heat. There was no sanitation. They were given food allotments, but the army was taking the food allotments and selling it, so a lot of them were starving to death. And then they got them together, and they left in groups of 1,000 over here, Blythe Ferry on the Tennessee River, which is where they ferried them across the river, and they would walking them all the way to Tahlequah, Oklahoma. The heat was so horrific. It was just, they were dying. And the leadership went to the army and said, if you will let us wait until October, till the heat goes, we will remove ourselves. So the army let them stay until October. And it just so happens that when they left, the worst snowstorm of the century hit, and killing many of them. But they made their way from Blythe Ferry on the Tennessee River, up there where Highway 60 crosses the Tennessee River, made their way up toward Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and across, over cutting the southern part of Illinois and dipping down into Missouri and Arkansas and across into Tahlequah. And the vulnerable, the young, and the elderly died. So that event stole the Cherokees' past, and it stole their future. But the grandmothers, the women, the people, they were strong, and they took care of each other. They helped each other survive as best as they could. And this is how the few that were left alive stayed alive. We're doing this Trail of Tears to celebrate my grandmother's commitment to living, to staying alive, the strength and the courage that it took to live through that. Because I'm here today, because my grandmother had the strength and the courage to live through something horrible. And I'm grateful to her, and I want to celebrate her, and I want to tell her thank you for having the strength to do that, because I'm here.
And the second half of this trip, you were telling me, is a memorial trip for your son.
It is. My son died last year. He passed away. He was 26. He was living and working in Nome, Alaska. It was an accidental shooting. I miss him very much. He and I were close. The memorial service, we had him cremated, and I'm we have his ashes with us on this trip, because he and I had planned on doing this trip several years ago together. And but he died, and so he's with us in spirit. Johnny's here with us, making this trip with us.
Now, Gene, how many miles have you traveled in this covered trailer right here over the years?
I would guess somewhere between 6,000 and 7,000 from the Poway, right close to the ocean on the Pacific side, to Jekyll Island in Georgia, and then back to California down at Friendship Park, which is where the Mexican border and the United States border and the ocean meet.
Now I've got to say, for those who are listening, you can hear a motor in the background. That's actually a lawnmower nearby. There's no motor on here at all.
No. I some people have horsepower, and I have 2 mule power.
Now, these 2 mules that we see here, are those the same mules that you've gone about 6,000 to 8,000 miles on?
Yeah. They've been every step of the way that wagon has. You know, they're exceptionally good mules.
How did you meet Gene? How did this story start for you?
Well, I was in Alaska, and my son had passed away, and I was in Alaska closing down. I'd lived in Alaska for several years, and I was closing my life down there. I had to get away. And my nephew kept saying, "Auntie, call Gene Glasscock. Auntie, call Gene Glasscock." And so I, in order to, I was up there for several months taking care of business, and I'd gotten a job as a caretaker for a llama ranch for the winter while the owners went on vacation. And so I was back up in this canyon by myself, just me and the llamas. And my nephew kept calling me, and so I started calling Gene, and I started talking in December, and we've been talking ever since. We're still talking, oddly enough, in spite of the small space and long distance.
Now, Gene, you're a U.S. veteran, aren't you?
Yes, Air Force.
How many years did you serve our country?
I only served 1 year.
Did you enjoy it?
No.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, there's some people that they're made for the service and some that aren't. And I really wasn't cut out for it. I got an honorable discharge, and so I get all the veterans' benefits, but I did not enjoy the Air Force. But that doesn't mean the Air Force is wrong. It doesn't mean I was wrong. It simply means that some people don't enjoy it.
Where did you go next in life?
Well, I ended up in Birmingham, Alabama, and that's where I accepted Christ as my Savior, and that's the most important thing that ever happened. And I worked for some ranchers in Oregon, and then I went to Alaska, and ended up being a chemical analysis Ketchikan Pulp Company at the ripe old age of 19. I went in the service when I was 17, got out just before I turned 18. And I worked up there for 13 months. Then I came stateside, went to Bible school, and then I went back to Alaska, and ended up going into business for myself. And I spent a total of about 8 years in Alaska, and then I came stateside and ended up working high-rise construction.
So the covered wagon we're looking at now, what got you started on that path? I mean, what made you want to build that?
Well, I had already ridden horseback from the Arctic Circle to the equator, and I've ridden to every one of the 48 state capitals, I did mission work in Mexico and in Paraguay, and I've been sent home a couple of times because of medical problems from mission work, and so I just thought, well, I can go across country, pass out the books of John and Romans, and see the country and meet the people. And that's a big part of traveling with horses or mules, is the people you meet. And they come from every walk of life. You don't know whether you're talking to a senator or to a outlaw, literally. And I was guest of Robert Betzel, who is pretty well up in the outlaw world. He was in charge of the drug running out of Costa Rica. And I've been the guest of preachers and state congressmen and everything in between. And one of the people that I truly admired was kind of an outlaw. It was in Texas, and he went out and killed pigs. Well, it's perfectly legal to kill pigs, but it's illegal to sell the meat. Now, you can take it home and eat it yourself. And they hire helicopters to go out and kill these wild pigs. But no one's allowed to sell the meat. Well, he sold the meat for $35 a hog, and he said he averaged two a day. And then he says, but I'm not on welfare. And I truly admired him for being self-sufficient. If the law is wrong, maybe we need to change the laws. The law is there to protect, to make profit for the meat industry in that particular case. And the laws are supposed to be for the people, not for the corporations, like many of our laws are. So anyway, that puts us off into the political world of my views.
And we're not doing politics today, Papa.
So I see a lot of names on the covered wagon. What are all those names I see where people signed it?
Go ahead.
Well, as we've traveled along, people just... One day Gene handed someone a pen and said, here. And from then on, one person, they see their name on there. Oh, I want to put my name on there. And people just come up and sign it like... And it's become a... it's a log of sorts. It's a journal of sorts. We can look on there and read so-and-so from such-and-such a place at such-and-such a date. And, oh, okay, we were there. We remember, you know. So it's like a journal, a moving journal. I told Gene when we're done with this ride, we should take the cover off the wagon and hang it on the living room wall.
Now, there were many, many more names that's on there. But we got to, I believe it's Bodega Springs in California, and we had a windstorm. The paper said it was 80 miles an hour, but there was a tin roof that was guaranteed to withstand 100 miles an hour, and it didn't go up underneath the tin from the bottom. It tore the tin across the...
Yeah, on your... Go ahead.
And that, with all the sand and stuff, it erased a lot of the names that were put on there.
Now, along your journey, have you ever gotten robbed at gunpoint or robbed, period, while in the wagon?
I've never been robbed. There's been a couple of attempts. I was hit across the back with a machete and... in Huchitan, Mexico, and I ended up, by the grace of God, I ended up with a machete, and the guy ran away hollering, you to me, help me, and I didn't want to do him any harm. I stepped on my horse and threw the machete down and rode away. But in David, Panama, I laid my billfold up on the saddle, and the billfold had shoestrings that you hang around your neck. It doesn't take much to slice those. I tried to chase the guy that stole it, and they passed it around, and there's no way to catch them. And I ended up in the prison there at David, which is for criminals that were in for violent crimes. And they kept me in for a week, and they wanted a bribe. And when they finally, they wouldn't let me call the American Embassy, which is illegal. You're supposed to be able to call the embassy within 24 hours. But anyway, they kept me in the prison for a week.
So why did they originally arrest you when your wallet was stolen?
They wanted a bribe. It's just the corruption of the country.
All right, so you've been to Panama. Where else have you been?
Back from the Arctic Circle to the equator.
That's a pretty unique experience, wouldn't you say?
Well, not many people have done it. As far as I know, I'm the only one that has gone intercontinentally and crossed the Darien Gap.
So when you go across the ocean, what are you on? I mean, do you take a cruise line where you just park everything in the bottom? What do you do?
No, I rode horseback from the Arctic to the equator.
Across the Bridge of America.
The way you cross the Bridge of America, you can't get permission to do it with a horse. So what you do, you wait for a traffic jam and then join the traffic jam and go on across.
So where is this journey of life going to take you next? I mean, what's the next stop?
I will be 80 on October the 11th, and I'm hoping to be in Tahlequah. And this has been a mild adventure for Nequaw and I, and I don't know, I thought maybe we'd look for a big adventure someplace. like buying a farm a small farm and raising some goats and having a mule.
Some fjord mules. We'd like to breed fjord mules or Heflinger mules maybe, I don't know.